are busy with the journey of Lent, and we are spending Lent in Narnia as a community at St. Andrews. And in our whole journey, we use the story of Narnia to help us understand or help us to remember the story of Jesus and the story of Easter. So we started off, we are in part 6 today, we started off part 1 with the frozen landscape, about people thinking, the famous kids actually, going into Narnia, the winter wonderland, and they were happy, it was nice, it was beautiful, all fluffy snow. And then we brought it to our world, saying that sometimes people just love all the good things about life, and it's just all fun and games. But then in the second part, we got to something is not right. After a while, people realize that we are missing something. There need to be more to life than just enjoyment, just chasing after fun. There need to be more. In the Narnia story, they realize that it's always winter in Narnia, so something was missing. Luckily, God has got a solution to the problem. All is not lost. Even though the plan of creation was for people to live in a constant relationship with God, then people chose differently, and then God said, you know what, I will fix it. I will put that on my account. I will send my son, and I will fix it myself, because I want this relationship between us to be restored. Part 4, we got into the world is thawing, so it's in the Narnia scenes of the ice starting to melt, and the green grass starting to come through the snow, and the buds on the trees. And we were talking about what the world would look like if this new plan of God is starting to work. And we look at the Beatitudes of how God's people should start living while this plan is started into action, and how we should approach life. Last week, Larry was speaking about the problem with Turkish Delight, and the cost to this rescue. The deep laws of Narnia and the deep laws of creation, that God doesn't manipulate us to love it. He created us with free will, and we get to choose. We get to choose if we want to respond to God's love or not. But then God had to bear the cost of our choice. And he was willing to do that because of his love for us. Looking at the Narnia scene, there was this conversation with the White Witch and the Benedict kids in Aslan's camp. And she said, redemption cannot come in any other way. It cannot come in any other way. That's the problem with the Turkish life. That for every sin, there is atonement that needs to be made. And that could only be fully done and fully paid by Jesus. So today, that brings us to part 6, in anticipation of victory. Now, today is Palm Sunday. We remember Jesus' journey, triumphant journey into Jerusalem. Now, you might ask, with everything going on, in our world now, I just want to help the camera's focus a little bit there. It seems that gets better. Thanks for the text. Somebody sent me a text about the camera being a bit blurry. Let's see if we can fix that. There we go. Thank you. I appreciate the text. Oh, somebody sent a text this morning as well. As you can see, there's a bit of a spelling mistake there. Anticipation needs an I, but it's a picture that was created before in Photoshop, so it's difficult to change that. The next slide, when it gets to the slide, hopefully it's fixed by then. So you might ask why we are just continuing with our regular Lent series. Why are we just continuing with our focus on Easter with everything going on around us? Should we not be talking about COVID-19? We are spending some time on that. We are trying to find hope in Scripture during the week. But as Christians, the thing that gives us the most hope of all is actually those things that did happen at Easter. Jesus' death on the cross and his resurrection on the Sunday. Was it not for that then we wouldn't have had any hope during this whole COVID-19 pandemic. So yes, we want to continue with our journey of Lent on our way to Easter. So we are not trying to be ostriches, burying our heads in the sand. We are on our way to Easter, because that is the thing that gives us the hope that we have even in this time. So let's have a look at our Narnia scene this morning. Just a little tip off of all the troops gathering. So let's go over to the video. You can see that everybody in the camp, in Aslan's camp, are preparing for battle. They are sharpening their weapons. They are shoeing the horses, and they are shoeing the centaurs. And they are raising the flags and stitching flags and getting them up. They are preparing to go into battle. But they are not preparing to go and lose. They are preparing to go and win. They've got Aslan. And in the build-up to this scene throughout the movie, we keep on hearing that Aslan's troops are on the move, that they are coming. They are anticipating victory. Now in the Bible, we find a similar idea. The triumphant entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. All four Gospels describe this event, but we will only have a look at two of them this morning. We will look at the full narrative from the Gospel of Luke, and then just a couple of verses from the Gospel of John. So first off, let's take our reading from Luke chapter 19, verses 28 to 42. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethphage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, Why are you untying it? Say, the Lord needs it. Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he had told them. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, why are you untying the colt? So they replied, the Lord needs it. They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. And when he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Now some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, Teacher, rebuke your disciples. I tell you, he replied, if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, if you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. And then the three verses from John's account of this, John 12, 16 to 19. At first, his disciples did not understand all of this. Now, this is just at the latter part of the account of the entry into Jerusalem. His disciples didn't understand all of this. Only after Jesus was glorified did they realize that these things had been written about him and that these things had been done to him. Now the crowd that was with him when he called Lazarus from the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to spread the word. Many people, because they had heard that he had performed this sign, went out to meet him. So the Pharisees said to one another, see, this is getting us nowhere. Look how the whole world has gone after him. At first, not even his disciples did understand all of this. Only after Jesus was glorified did they realize that these things had been written about him and that these things had been done. Now, Jesus was going viral at this time. At the beginning of John's account, we see that it was just 6 days before the Passover, so it was on the Saturday, so the day before Palm Sunday. Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead before. So, he came on the Saturday, and there was this dinner that was given in honor of Jesus. Martha served him while Lazarus was with him, reclining at the table, and they had this dinner. Meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there. So they came, not only because they wanted to see Jesus, but they wanted to see Lazarus being alive again, and they want to understand this miracle that happened, this story that they have heard about Jesus raising somebody from the dead. So that because of this, the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well. They were already making plans to kill Jesus, but they thought, yeah, maybe we should kill Lazarus as well, because then people cannot see him walking around again. They won't believe the story. But the day before Palm Sunday, Jesus came to Bethany, and there was this great big dinner in honor of him. And he was going viral. People came to look, to see him, to see Lazarus. Now, if there would have been YouTube or any social media at the time, the likes would have been streaming in. Somebody posting, saw Jesus there, like. Because Jesus was in the village where he raised Lazarus from the dead. And he had already had this huge crowd of followers who was going around with him. We know at some stages the number of these people that followed him reached around 12,000 people. Remember, he fed 5,000 with the five loaves and the two fishes, but they only counted the men in those days. They didn't really include the women and children in the count. So New Testament scholars estimate that the number would have been closer to 12,000 people. So there are these loads of people who are already following him. Now now he goes to this town where he raised Lazarus from the dead, and even more people come because they want to see him. He's going viral. This was the pinnacle of the miracles that he did, raising a guy from the dead. And now this same crowd, the same huge crowd, is anticipating victory. Their numbers were growing, and more got added to their number. And they grew braver and bolder, and more of the prophecies of the Old Testament started echoing through their minds. The prophecies of Jesus being the new king. And the more people came, the louder and louder the chanting became. Blessed is the King of Israel. So Jesus was going so viral that when two of his disciples went to fetch a donkey for him to ride on, this guy, whose donkey it was, the owner, stormed them, probably wielding some sort of weapon, I don't know, but he stormed them and yelled, "Hey, what are you doing? That's my donkey." And they just went, "Jesus needed." And put the guy went, "Oh, okay." Probably dropping whatever weapon he was wielding at the time, because he knew about Jesus. Maybe he has seen him, I don't know. Maybe, just maybe, Jesus will remember him when he's crowned the new king. So this guy goes, "Okay, it's Jesus needing my donkey." And it's not because he was this very spiritual guy, the owner of the donkey. It's just that Jesus became viral. The story started spreading about Jesus and what he was doing and what he was capable of doing. So when he heard it was Jesus that needs his donkey, he said, "Okay, then you take it." Because this is what a lot of people were thinking, that Jesus would be the new king of Israel, that the end of this whole horrid Roman rule over them is almost over. Soon, a Jew would be leading the Jewish people again. And they were good with that. They were all down with that. So they were preparing for victory. And the parade into the city of Jerusalem would be just the thing to kick off this showdown. So they lined the streets, they cut off palm branches, and they waved them, which is a sign of victory in itself. They threw their clothes on the road for Jesus' donkey to walk on. And then after this, a lot of singing and chanting. So there was a lot of expectation in the air for more miracles to be seen, more sick people to be healed, and more dead people to be raised. And this group of people, this whole crowd that lined the streets all the way from the Mount of Olives to Jerusalem, they couldn't even be bothered that they should have been at the other end of the city on that particular day. Now, most people are familiar with the Palm Sunday procession in which Jesus entered Jerusalem. But not everybody is aware that there was another procession taking place in Jerusalem at the same time on the other side. And that was a Roman procession. Because the Romans made a point of entering the city every year at Passover. And they did so in full armor and on horseback to make a statement of Roman power, Roman theology, and Roman authority. They were there to ensure order. So Pontius Pilate also came to Jerusalem for Passover. But for this reason, not as all the Jews that were coming to Jerusalem for Passover to atone for their sins. He came for this purpose, and he was part of that procession. Because Pilate didn't live in Jerusalem. It was too hostile an environment for Romans and Gentiles in general. So like other governors, pilot lived in a beautiful seaside town called Caesarea by the sea. So he was just hanging out at a cottage while ruling over Jerusalem and the whole of Judea. But as appointed governor of Judea, he was still tasked with keeping the peace in Judea, especially so during the holy days, like Passover, when emotions ran high and the people of Jerusalem burned with this revolutionary zeal to overthrow their Roman oppressors. And his title as governor and even his life depended on maintaining the order of the empire, particularly during Passover in his area. So Pilate made the 96-kilometer journey to Jerusalem, accompanied by hundreds of Roman troops, just to remind these Jews that they may be God's people, but Rome was still calling the shots. So, traditionally, on this day, Pilate paraded into Jerusalem on the first day of the Passover week, entering from the west gate, the main gate of Jerusalem, with his legions of chariots and horses and foot soldiers dressed for battle and armed with the swords and the spears. So they would enter through there in this big procession. Now the majesty with which Pilate entered the front gate of the city was meant to inspire awe and fear both at the same time, and also respect and obedience. Meanwhile, at the east gate, the back gate, this other parade was going on. And this parade was just as carefully staged as Pilate's entry into Jerusalem. But it looked different. Jesus' humble, yet still triumphal entry into Jerusalem was in stark contrast to the magnificence and brutality on display on the opposite side of the city, with weapons. And Jesus wanted to make a point through this. He wanted to make a point that he is a servant king, that he's the king of peace. And he was also anticipating victory, even though he wasn't looking forward to this particular victory. Because he knew the cost of this victory. And maybe this entry into Jerusalem was the actual tipping point for a few of those people in the crowd that day. So even though people lined the streets and cut off palm branches and waved them and threw their clothes on the road for Jesus' donkey to walk over with all the singing and chanting, maybe some of them compared notes with a neighbor in the city later that evening. Compared their notes with a neighbor that went to the other procession, the other entry into Jerusalem. And in comparing notes, they realized that the other procession was way grander and a way bigger exhibition of power than the procession of Jesus. So maybe some of them went, "Oh well, I really thought this guy Jesus was going to be it, but then again, it was only him in the procession and on a donkey." So they lost that anticipation of victory because they had the wrong type of victory in mind. They were thinking small scale. They were thinking political victory when Jesus was thinking victory of life over death. Now, lots of people in that same crowd would turn on him during the following week. They'll be chanting at the end of that week again, but this time the chanting would be, "Kill him, kill him, kill him." A lot of the same people. And they won't be throwing their clothes on the ground before him, but instead they would be ripping his clothes from his body. After that Sunday, after that procession into Jerusalem, the glamour of it all started losing some of its shine for the spectators. And Jesus took off that gentle Jesus, meek and mild tag off of it. Because in the last week, Jesus changed, or his way of doing ministry changed. The invitation became serious during that last week. And at the time, no one seemed to get it. Not even the disciples. We read that at first these disciples did not understand all of this. This procession and the victory parade it actually was. It's only after the resurrection of Jesus, with the benefit of hindsight, that they were able to make sense of the actual meaning of Jesus' entry into Jerusalem. The entry as a king, but not as a political king, but as King Jesus, the Messiah, the Savior. You see, the man on the back of the donkey was on his way to the cross. And he knew it. And for him, things were getting real serious now. And his followers needed to start grasping what it was all about. And Palm Sunday, the entry into Jerusalem, kicked Jesus' ministry into a different gear. It kicked his message into a different gear. For 3 years up till this time, Jesus wooed people to fall in love with him. He invited them to follow him. He patiently told these stories to help them understand what God is like. Showed them what he is capable of through miracles to make it easier for them to believe in him. But Palm Sunday marks a shift. When the wooing and invitations change into now do. Now choose whether you are going to believe. You see, Palm Sunday comes with a call to action. Palm Sunday indicates that it is time to choose. Do you take Jesus by his words or by his word? Then act on it. If Jesus says you are free, act like you are. If Jesus says you are forgiven, act like you are forgiven, because you are. If Jesus says you are loved, act like you are loved, because you are. If Jesus says, I will take care of you, act like he is, because he is. If Jesus says, share my message, share my love with others, then do it. This Palm Sunday indicates that it's time to choose. Do you take Jesus by his word? Yes or no? Then act on it. And our actions sometimes indicate our choice. If you act on it, if you do take Jesus by his word, and if you do act on it, then this day, Palm Sunday, is the day of the victory parade. Because then the king, our king, is on his way to overcome. And our king did overcome. So act on it. Jesus, thank you so much that we can also anticipate victory because of Palm Sunday. Thank you that we also get to choose whether we take you by a word, that we get to choose whether we do believe you, whether we do believe in you.
thank you that as part of that choice, that thank you that we get to believe and believe you when you say you love us. Believe you when you say we are free. Believe you when you say we are forgiven. Thank you that we can have the benefit of hindsight looking back at past events, knowing what happened on Good Friday, knowing what happened on the Sunday, knowing what happened when you ascended into heaven to